Johnny Hero Show here on U105. Very pleased to say today's very special guest, the one and only Ruby Wax. Ruby, how are you
doing?
Hi,
I'm okay. I'm in Belfast, a place where I've had some of my more interesting experiences, like that thing you were talking about. I did some show here that died on its feet.
Yes,
as you said, I saved it.
No, you did. Yeah,
I just thought, let's bring that up.
You were the one bright spark in a fairly
dim,
pedestrian, dim evening.
Yeah.
You know,
I went on it with great shame, but still.
Do people tend to hire you for events knowing that you will bring much needed life? Let's say.
I can't say. I don't know, but usually I'm hired to do my own. You know, nobody else is on that show.
Yeah.
So I guess they use me like a kind of colostomy, you know, where you... a colonoscopy, you know, where you bump it up.
Yes.
They're paying for my ability to bump it up.
You know, because you are viewed as someone who is automatically the life and soul of the party.
Only if you pay.
Yes.
Well, yeah, otherwise I'm
but whatever
dead
you do,
on my feet.
You're not going to be boring.
No, that's true. But outside of that, there's not much else.
Yeah, but I mean...
Oh, no, there is. I just graduated from Oxford on Monday.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did. It's cognitive behavior therapy,
whatever. Yeah, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy.
Yes.
And I went to the thing, you know, the ceremony where you wear the bat wings. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Happiest day of my life.
Because I am. The reason it jumped out at me, I was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder at one stage. And I had to go through all this cognitive behavioral therapy.
Oh, really?
And,
did it work?
It did, yes.
What were you post-traumatic from?
I was in a kind of an accident where a boat sank, right?
Oh, my God.
And it was one of those. While the boat was sinking, I thought it was a laugh. But then they told me later on, listen, this is just protectionism coming in and you're trying to convince yourself it's not happening.
Oh,
and
my God.
So, but it did sink in
the
following months.
You were on
the boat? I was on a boat that sank, yeah.
Was everybody okay?
Yeah, eventually we all got off, but it was one of those helicopters and lifeboats and things like that, you know.
Not the Titanic.
No.
Because I made that.
I know I look old.
No.
But no, so it was one of those things, but I didn't realize until months after my behavior had changed. And I was, this is like a live psychiatry section.
Tell
on
me
the,
what
the radio.
Happened.
But you know all about, so that's the reason it struck a chord with me. I was suffering from this. It was basically depression without knowing it.
Yeah. Well, you would if you saw something like that. But very few people would admit it. They'd say they're fine, you know, because nobody wants to look weak.
But that was me.
But how much can a human being take?
You know?
Yeah.
And people were saying, what was it like? And I said, well, it was fairly exciting.
Yeah.
You know, but
I love being in the trenches. They didn't know that 90% went mad.
Yeah. That's right. So have you been through your own sort of journey with, depression?
I have it, you know, so it's not a journey.
Mm.
It just lives in me. So I had it since I was a kid, but we thought it was like glandular fever. Nobody knew what this stuff was. You know, it one generation back when my mother, they said she was having a change of life.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, for 87 years. You know, this woman is cleaning the walls, you know, over and over again. But people said it was a turn. You know, this is a new thing that people realize. It's not possession by the devil. I mean, in some countries, they still think, you know, they got to burn you at the stake.
Yeah.
So I came out and said I had it only because Comic Relief put a poster of me up in the tube station that said, this woman has mental illness, please help her. Otherwise, I never would have told anybody.
Yeah.
So then I did a show. I wrote a show. Because I wanted people to think that was my poster for the show. And I toured it in mental institutions for 2 years. That was the most satisfying work I've ever done. Because they are when they know you're not laughing at them, but you're one of them, boy, are they appreciative.
Yeah, but was this a big, big step for someone in your position in the entertainment business to come out and say, well, yes, I suffer from depression?
Well, my career wasn't ever going onward. I kind of know when to leave the party.
Because
there are people coming up behind you. And also, you know, suddenly your eyes go kind of dead. Because enough is enough. I did 22 years of it.
Yeah.
And you know, if you hold on too much longer, it's going to be pathetic. Just before you end up in Panto, get out. Or Big Brother.
Big Brother.
That's the
graveyard.
That's when they put the spear in your heart.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to study how the brain works. So that's why I went to Oxford. But meanwhile, I was doing a show that was about, it's about all of us, you know, all of our malaise, you know, that we don't have an instruction manual. Nobody knows really how we're supposed to get on here,
yeah,
or how to be a mother, or how do you act like a wife, or, you know, who knows it? We always think the next guy knows.
Yeah.
But, and that's why we're so isolated, and we keep real busy so we don't have to think about that stuff. So that's part of the show. It's funny, though. I know I'm not being funny now. And then the second half of the show is going into the 1 in 4 who have something mentally unstable. And funny enough, the audience understand. They go along with me on that one, too. Now, it gets really funny, but nobody ever minded because I already did the institutions. And if they give it the seal of approval, it's okay.
Yeah.
And so by the end, everybody gets the journey.
As you say, well, you're not necessarily poking fun at a section of society. You've been there, and you know.
No, I'm so, you know, I'm in an institution, and we used to steal food from the anorexics, and they didn't mind. You know, I'm giving you the whole tour, or you know, when I went, you know, when I knew something was wrong, I was redecorating my kitchen for the 177th time, obsessed with finding the right beige. Now that's all of us, right? But some of us have a weakness, and it drives us nuts. Other people just are the, you know, they live
well,
their
listen,
lives.
You will strike a chord here in Northern Ireland because what we affectionately call the troubles, the violence that went on for so long. Do you know the level of Valium addiction among housewives was
here,
the highest ever recorded in any part of the world?
In here, in Belfast.
Yeah, in Belfast and Northern Ireland generally during the troubles. So the GPs were just handing out Valium like they were sweets. And again, we had a whole generation of women who specialized in cleaning their houses 20 times a day.
Yeah, it's the best way to retreat from really what, you know, it's like you're running from your own brain.
Yeah. So all these little women in the depths of this destruction and violence had the cleanest houses on the planet. But it was just, oh, she's house proud, you know. Oh, the buildings are falling apart. And
then
in the
end, they can't stop making the cup of tea. You know, there's like a, you know, you go from the kitchen to the thing, to the kitchen to the thing. People, you know, get embedded in their little trenches. And nobody knows that's crazy.
Yeah.
They just think, oh, look, she's a creature of habit. So the fact that GPs do throw out this stuff to keep us quiet, you know, when they're not real experts on what exactly is wrong.
Yeah.
And people are doing it all over. They're throwing it out like M&Ms.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are a society where everybody's trying to keep the handle on it.
But certainly your audience in the waterfront will readily identify with all of that because that happened here for decades, you know.
Well, then everybody who's been on Valium and cleaned their house, come to the show because I am one of you. You are my people.
So listen, in the show, you don't tell jokes.
I never was a joke teller.
Mm.
You know, I think really funny people don't. They just paint pictures with words, you know, and they hit the heart of people. You know, I always think comedians used to be the philosophers. You hold up a mirror and say, we're all screwed.
Yeah.
And that's as funny as you can get.
Yeah.
You know,
I just always wonder to make it, because I know you make observations about life and sort of point out the absurdities. And I mean, do you ever feel there's a danger that you'll run out of material? Or is there always something that you can talk about?
Well, I'm not a comedian. Well, I think I did. I think comedians have their sell-by date because there's only so long you can talk about dating or men or, you know, your diet. So I went to, I know this sounds weird, but it's not so much in this show, but certainly in the next one, but a little bit of it is in this one, is that I went to study how our brains work. Now, some of that is in this show, but I flip it like Bill Bryson does to make it funny and accessible so that I'm giving you information, but it's funny. And I think that that's going to keep my comedy going because
being educated as well.
Well, you're getting information that I'm, like I did it on TED Talks, you know, with a clay piece of brain to understand there is nobody up there shouting with a bullhorn. This is how you think. You know, people think, oh, it just happens because it happens. And actually, if you know the mechanics, you've got nothing to say. You're being run by a bigger machine than you think you are. So I wrote a book called, I'm just going to plug it, Say New World,
right?
Which was number one on the bestseller.
Good, good. Number one.
And it's being sold here, Say New World. So I think it's being sold tonight.
Good. So get your book in the foyer of the gig.
But what I did do is like I research a lot of stuff so that, you know, the show is really relevant to how we all are as human beings and what the glitches are, you know, because evolution meant well, but it did screw up a little bit. It didn't know that we were going to have so much incoming. So what once saved us, you know, the guys who were the busiest were the ones that survived, and now the busiest, the winners are the losers.
Yeah.
They burn out faster.
Well, they burn out faster, huh?
Yeah. You know, the ones that want to achieve and achieve and get more. Well, there's too much open. There's the malls are too big. So we never, like, get full. You know?
There's no satisfaction.
There's no satisfaction.
I read a piece in an interview you did for the Belfast Telegraph, and I think you said previously your coping mechanism would have been, I'm going shopping, I need to find that particular shade of blue in a handbag kind of thing. But now you just basically go into lockdown.
That's how our chemicals work, is that we're supposed to find what we need, but the chemical, like this stuff in our brain called dopamine, we never get satisfaction when we get the thing we need. We're already foraging for more because that's what made us survive. Like, where's the next place that looks like this? So let's say you get a pair of shoes. There's never going to be satisfaction. You're already looking for the next shoe-rich environment. And people don't get it. That's why there's never any happy addicts.
Yeah.
But we have to learn a breaking system. Otherwise, we'll be dragged through life with an endless shopping list.
I mean, that sounds typical behavior for, you know, well, compulsive shoppers or gamblers even.
We're all compulsive.
Even with gamblers, even the winning doesn't do it for them.
No. And the more you get, the more you want. You know, it is your own stuff in your brain. It's like cocaine. Not that I ever tried it, but, you know, the more you get, you need a bigger bite next time.
So how do we stop the vicious circle?
Oh, you got to read my book, Same New World. I give you the answer.
Okay.
It's not one answer.
Yeah.
And I'm not being flippant. So I give you alternatives. But they really do know where the breaks in your brain are. And it isn't by doing those weekend courses on finding your inner angel.
Yeah.
There is real hardcore evidence about how you can actually regulate your own, you know, once you know that you're an addict, there's an easier way to stop. It's like when you understand the engine of a car, it's easier to fix it. So a lot of that is knowing, you know, I have a proclivity for these kind of people because of certain things. You can actually start pulling back and saying, this is my temptation. Let's go the other way.
Yeah.
Let's not look at the bookshops that don't have my book. Let's just turn our head. I walk through the airport, if I look at W.H. Smith and my book isn't there, I gag on the floor. So now I train myself, don't look at the bookshop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
And we can do that with everything. I'm not an example, but I am trying to cool myself down because I can get pretty riled up.
So do you ever think, given the longer picture, that maybe if we have a purpose on the world, yours isn't as an entertainer, it was to write this book?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. I think that I wasn't born to do that. I studied psychology first, but then narcissism got the best of me and it got lucrative. So I started showing off like a little girl, you know, somebody who was kind of an ugly runt suddenly had attention. And when the limelight's on you, you just keep tap dancing.
Yeah.
But I was always smart, but it kind of died while I was doing show business because they want you to repeat. They never let you get older. That's why French and Saunders stopped, because you hit a certain point, you have to start imitating what you used to be like. So, you know, they started asking me to do, I actually have it in my show, a show called Celebrity Shark Bait. That's as low as it can go. And the sharks aren't the celebrities. Richard E. Grant and I were put in a tub of live sharks.
Yeah.
We knew then the career was dead. Yeah, literally. Because the sharks didn't even want to eat us because they knew there was an A-list. So, and we weren't it. So then I thought, this has got to stop now. So then I enrolled in school. And actually what I did, I couldn't figure out why I was doing it, is that when I came out, because I am good at, you know, I'm good at on a stage, I took the information and put it together with what I learned. And so I'll have longevity in my career because nobody else can imitate that unless they go learn something too. But you know what I mean? Nobody on TED Talks is funny. So I'm one of the first people that did it. And that's kind of pleasurable. So people are laughing, but you're talking about real hardcore stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
because my job was taken by many other people when I used to be on TV. People start imitating you.
Well, they're not going to take this one.
They can't take this one. Shoot them with a crossbow.
Ruby, thank you very much.
You're
in the waterfront.
Are you going to come to the show
tonight? Yes, I am.
You're
in the waterfront tonight and tomorrow night.
And tomorrow night.
Okay, listen.
There better be an audience, otherwise I'm going to have another depression.
People queuing up, buying the book as well.
Yeah.
See, sell the book.
I don't know and they get to talk to me as long as they want during the show and after. We have an interval in the show, yeah. right? I do the whole show. And then I've done this for 4 years. I invite the audience to come back if they want to have a discussion.
Are you serious?
And that's when it gets real interesting. I don't humiliate it. The audience start taking over. And wherever I've been, they start talking and you can't shut them up.
Well, that's an offer. That's really is that you
can't refuse. Well, because I made them feel safe in the first half. Yeah. You know, I do a kind of mental striptease and then they feel safe and they right. think, oh, I want to say this. And the second half is really good.
Okay. Ribby, thanks for coming in.
I can't plug anymore.
No, thanks. Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you.